From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. With ADHD and other diagnoses on the rise, today's youth are experiencing chronic levels of anxiety and depression. And that's why it is so important to make sure that these children feel supported as well as understood. Dr. Sharon Saleen is a licensed clinical psychologist, an award-winning author, and a top expert on ADHD, anxiety, and mental health challenges. And we're lucky enough to have her joining us today to talk more. Dr. Saleen, thank you so much for coming on the program today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So can we just start really with the basics? And that is, what is ADHD?
I think that's a really good place to start. And it's a short question with a long answer. The way that I like to describe ADHD is that it's a chronic condition marked by persistent inattention, hyperactivity, and sometimes impulsivity that is more frequent and severe than is typically observed in children, teens, or adults of the same age. It's a novelty-seeking brain. Interest fosters motivation. These are creative, outside-the-box thinkers. It's a performance-based condition that, you know, has to do with executive functioning skill deficits. There are three types: hyperactive, impulsive, inattentive, separately, and then the combined type. And about 10% of students in the United States under the age of 18 have been diagnosed with ADHD. And 64% have received an ADHD diagnosis at some point, according to the CDC. So it is definitely here, and it is here to stay. And in order to get a diagnosis, you have to have 6 out of 9 symptoms in 2 areas of functioning for more than 6 months if you're under the age of 17. And then you can have 5 out of 9 symptoms over the age of 17. And I think it's important to lay out this rather technical information when I give you a definition, because there's so many, there's so much misinformation that's going around.
Well, and so Dr. Saleen, let's talk a little bit about that. Because my listening audience is aware that one of my kids has ADHD. It is something that he is very open about. That is why I share it. And we have noticed over the years that there's still a lot of resistance to ADHD, definitely not from his school environment, but kind of like the outside world, in the sense that I think there is a lot of misunderstanding about it. And what I hear sometimes is, well, where did this come from? Because no kids had it when we were growing up. And I tend to argue, like, oh, they had it, we just didn't diagnose it.
I think that's true. You know, ADHD has been around. I think the first note of it in scientific journals or records is from the 1700s. It's been around for a long time. We didn't have a name for it. We didn't understand it. It wasn't really researched. And so now things are very different. We understand neurodivergence, the kids who have ADHD or a learning disability or on the spectrum or might be, you know, gifted and have anxiety or other kinds of issues, that these all come together in a way that makes learning, particularly learning information that's not compelling or interesting, very difficult. Because one of the central challenges of ADHD is inconsistency in motivation. You can be super motivated and really successful at your gaming, but you're not very motivated to do your math homework, even though you do want to get a good grade in math.
Oh, you're speaking my language right now. That's literally what's going on in our house right now. So in your book, What Your ADHD Child Wishes You Knew, Working Together to Empower Kids for Success in School and Life, you write about exactly what the title is, What Your Child Wants You to Know. And I want to chat a little bit about a couple of these topics. The first being, when parents get upset, kids get upset too. Why is that important that we understand that?
I think that we're under some sort of myth that our children can somehow regulate themselves even when we are dysregulated. And maybe some kids can, but particularly for kids who have ADHD, who already struggle with their own impulse and emotional control, having a parent be dysregulated makes it even harder for them because, you know, what happens is when we start to get upset and activated, it's like throwing fuel on the, mm-hmm. you know, building fire within them that's leading to, you know, a huge outburst. And so we may have our own feelings, we may be triggered, but we have to manage ourselves. That's part of being an adult. And I kind of learned this the hard way. When my kids, particularly my second child, was in middle and high school, and they were, you know, really pushing up against me for independence, and I was going through perimenopause, it was really not a good combination.
I so understand.
Yeah. And, you know, I would get triggered and I would lose it. And I'm most ashamed of that. And I think that's part of what guided me to write this book, because I would like other parents to learn from my mistakes and learn from how I've grown and what I've seen in my clinical practice. I think that's really important because we're all mm-hmm. struggling to do the best that we can with the tools that we have available to us at any given moment. And the challenge is that for many people with ADHD, they can't access those tools because of difficulties with working memory or slower processing speed. And so mm-hmm. it's harder to pull up in a moment. You know, something like this happened before. I remember the last time I started to feel this way. I'm supposed to do something, but I can't remember what it is. And I can't even slow down enough to engage in a thinking process here. I'm just going to go with the amygdala hijack and I'll see you when on the other side.
Well, and it's interesting that you say that, because I mean, even in our household, I mean, I've definitely been triggered. I have, you know, yelled at my child. I mean, right. And it just escalates mm-hmm. and everything. And you do, you feel such shame around that and everything. But then, you know, this other point that you write about is that kids and parents need compassion and acceptance. And, mm-hmm. and I know that once again, seems simple, but at the same time, if you don't have a child with ADHD, it is, I think, a difficult thing to understand when that deregulation happens, you know, from your yes. child in particular.
Of course. So the thing is that what we have to think about, you know, my five C's is self-control. We've talked about that. Compassion, collaboration, consistency, and celebration. Compassion is such an important step for us to discuss, because it's not about, you know, having so much empathy that you never get upset or expecting yourself mm-hmm. to be perfect. That's not compassion. And that's not consistency either. What compassion is actually meeting your kids where they are now, and not where you think they should be based on their age, based on their cognitive ability, based on how their sibling might do, or their cousin, or their height. That's not what we want to do. These are kids who desperately want to feel seen and understood. And a lot of times they give up on themselves because they feel like adults have given up on them. The adults don't help them. Adults can't understand them. And they feel like they're ultimately sort of alone. And so I think that's a big message to send to parents of kids with ADHD. It's like, you don't have to be perfect, but you need to show up and meet your child where they are, rather than expecting like a miracle has taken place overnight and now they're suddenly somebody different. Like the mm-hmm. arguments that you have, you're going to continue to have. The question is, how can you deal with them differently? And I talk about that in my book, that it's really about being steady as a parent and collaborating with our kids. These are kids who want to have a say. They spend a lot of time in their life listening to how they should do things that may not make sense to them, to themselves, or to their own innate way of thinking. And so it's important that we include them in whatever solutions we're trying to create, that they have a buy-in. And it's particularly important that we're aiming aiming for steadiness, not perfection. And that's why I talk about efforting. You know, we want to see kids efforting. And someone actually once wrote to me and they said, I'm not going to follow you anymore because you've made up a word. And I said, well, yes, okay, fine. I'm glad you emailed me to tell me that. But here's the deal. It's not just trying for these kids. It is efforting because it's a mind, body, and emotional experience. And for a lot of kids, they can just think about something and that's trying and that works out for them. But for these neurodivergent kids, it's a full body effort.
So let's talk then about school and, you know, and that efforting, right? Because I think school can be very difficult. I mean, for a lot of kids, right? ADHD kids in particular. And at the same time, as you mentioned at the top of our conversation, is that these kids want, you know, many of them, they want to get good grades. They really do want to do well in school. But it's finding that, I mean, I have found in our own home, it's like my child wants to get good grades. He will spend more time, you know, playing Fortnite with his friends and doing really well on that and not being able to concentrate on things like homework and everything. And so we're in this situation of, okay, we call them brain breaks, right? Where you need to come down, you need to do this amount of homework, then you can have a brain break for this amount of time. And this is what has tended to work for now in our house. It could change. So what are some things that we should be doing if we are a caretaker of a child with ADHD, really when it comes to them not wanting just to be successful in school, but setting them up so they can be successful?
That's a really good question. The thing that we want to remember is that interest fosters motivation and that there are different types of motivation. There's extrinsic motivation where you're responding to an outside request or demand. You need to turn in the permission form by Friday to go on the field trip on Monday, for example. And there's intrinsic motivation, which is, you know, something that you want to do for yourself. It's a goal you set for yourself so you can feel good about yourself when it's accomplished. And that could be like running 3 miles instead of two, or making the next level on a computer game. And so what happens in a lot of families with ADHD is that they don't consider these two types of motivation. Intrinsic motivation, the satisfaction of doing something because, you've done a good job, really doesn't coalesce in people until the early 20s. So fully. So yes, some people have it naturally on in things that interest them, but in things that are not as interesting, it's harder to sort of summon up the oomph to get started. And so that's where we use extrinsic motivators. So for example, most of the people I work with who also have screen issues, you're not alone with their kids, we talk about putting the have to before the want to. So you're going to have to do some homework. And you can take a break and you're going to work for maybe as you can concentrate. I've noticed for about 15 minutes, then you need a body break. And then for a few minutes, 5 minutes, and then you'll do another 15. And then maybe then you're done your homework and you can earn your screen time. You can begin the screen time that we agreed on in advance, how much it is and for how long and what type. And these are very important discussions to have, whether if you're parenting alone, maybe with a pediatrician or a primary care provider or some friends or a counselor. And then if you're parenting with someone, with your partner, so that you can sit down and have a family meeting. And, you know, I would encourage you to do a short meeting every week to talk about, you know, what the ground rules and how they're going and what might need to be tweaked. Ideally, you'd want to meet in the middle. That's that compromise, the collaboration about how much screen time and when and what kind. But that screen time has to come after the have to, because if it comes before the have to, there's no motivator.
There's no have to after that.
There's no have to. It's like, well, why would I do that when I can do the fun thing for as long as I want? And then I'm going to have a tantrum when you tell me I have to stop the fun thing, because I don't want to stop the fun thing. And why would I stop this fun thing to do my homework? Yuck. But if the agreement is I do my homework and then I get the fun thing and I have a limit on that fund thing, and if how I transition off that fund thing affects minutes that I get the next day or bonus time. That's another thing that I think can really help parents. Like, okay, you can have your fun thing for an hour, and there's up to another half hour of bonus time that's earned through easing off when it's time to get off, not yelling and screaming at me the day before, or helping out with chores, something like that. You really have to set up a program and then come back and visit it and tweak it and expect that your kids are going to push back against it initially, because they can't tell if you actually mean business.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I so appreciate your time talking with us today. It's so important that we talk about this, because I think ultimately, you know, you want to do the best for your child. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really a great privilege, and I hope you have a great day.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Did you know you are physically adapting to all your swiping, scrolling, and tapping?
We're changing our bodies and what they're able to do through our habits.
NPR's Body Electric, a special interactive series investigating how to fix the relationship between our tech and our health. Listen in the TED Radio Hour feed wherever you get your podcasts.